Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Eye on the Tigers podcast. My name is Eli Hoff and I'm your Mizzou sports beat writer for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and STLtoday.com. The 2024 college football season is over for Missouri. It is now 2025. The Tigers beat the Iowa Hawkeyes 27-24 in the Music City Bowl in Nashville on Monday. We're getting close to the time of year where we go all in, so we say, on basketball, but also not really, because I was talking about this with some of the other beat writers as we were leaving Nashville. Spring football last year, I think, started even before February was over. So, you know, we're only a couple months away from spring football, and we'll have that to talk about as well. SEC play starts for men's basketball this weekend, and Mizzou will travel to face Auburn on the road, which is about as tough away as you can start an SEC basketball season. I figure on this week's show, we'll talk a little about the Music City Bowl, what can be taken away from a quote-unquote exhibition game, as Eli Drinkwitz labeled it going in. We'll talk a little basketball, and then we'll call it an episode. So like I mentioned there, Mizzou wins 27-24. It's a 56-yard kick from Blake Craig that is the difference between Missouri and Iowa. Mizzou gets to 10-3 on the season, back-to-back 10-win seasons for the third time in program history. You probably knew all of that and maybe even watched the game. I'll start with kind of the on-field takeaways, which are brief, and then I want to talk about Eli Drinkwitz's exhibition game comment before the game, because I think, in all honesty, you can make the case for that being one of the more interesting things, or the most interesting thing to have emerged from this game. Top line headline performance, especially for us as a St. Louis newspaper, right, was Brady Cook's day. And in his final game of his Mizzou career, he goes 18 for 32 for 287 yards and two touchdowns, no interceptions. He had a really good day on the ground. He was Mizzou's leading rusher with 54 rushing yards, and that includes sacks. And so he actually had a really good day. The rest of the Missouri team did not combine for 54 rushing yards, so Brady Cook had more than the rest of the team combined. He had his biggest passing day of the season with those 287 yards. So a legacy game for Brady Cook, which was very rewarding to see for him in his final game, as we have talked about many times and written about it. And you guys as fans know, you really just don't see players who want to be where they are or want to be at the school they're at as much as Brady Cook. It means more to him than probably anybody else on this roster. And that's no knock to anybody on this roster. That's just how much it means for Brady Cook. Other strong individual performances. Theo Weiss, wide receiver, went into this one as the wide receiver one, with Luther Burden opting out for NFL draft preparation and just not risking getting hurt before he goes into the draft. Theo Weiss, 5 catches for 75 yards and a touchdown. That was all in the first half. He was ruled out with an injury at halftime. The team just said it was an upper body injury, which I think could range from really, you know, abdomen to arms to head. It looked like right before halftime there he'd taken a pretty good hit to his head area there. It was one of those situations where, now I'm getting these reviews mixed up, I think that was the one that was called targeting and then overturned, because shortly before then the game there'd been a play that wasn't targeting but then was deemed targeting. There was some weirdness with targeting reviews, and this was even before the Arizona State Texas targeting play during the New Year's Day college football playoff semifinal. And so Theo Weiss, one half of action, that leaves plenty of room for some of Mizzou's younger wide receivers to play, which is the sort of thing that I think we were looking, I don't know if looking forward to, but just looking to as something to watch in this bowl game. Marquise Johnson, the sophomore speedster, has a career day. He gets 7 catches for 122 yards and a touchdown. That was his first 100-yard day of his career. He had he got the volume, he got the touchdown, obviously, but he had a 44-yard reception there that I think was about as encouraging as you'd want to see from him. It was a deep shot, which is nothing new with Marquise Johnson, but it was a little underthrown by Brady Cook. Johnson had the time to get his body fully around, turn around, and go up for it and fight for it, and made a really good catch there, a 44-yard play. Daniel Blood had 2 catches for 38 yards. Joshua Manning, he was out there a whole lot, and he'd started games towards the end of the regular season, so that wasn't anything especially new for him. But yeah, he did not have any catches. He did, however, have a rushing touchdown on a jet sweep, 1 carry for 4 yards and a touchdown. Makes for efficient work from the wide out there. You'd expect all of those guys to be factors going into next season. Of course, they'll be joined by Kevin Coleman Jr. coming over from Mississippi State. You'd really expect it to be Manning, Johnson, and Coleman as the 3 starters, but I'm sure that will be a position group that Eli Drinkwitz says is open for competition come spring ball and fall camp. Running back wise, not a whole lot of note there. Nate Noel and Marcus Carroll, both in their final game, 6 carries each. Didn't do a whole lot with those, but it just wasn't a big ground game for Missouri. Defensively, the big plays came from a Toriano Pride interception, a couple big Johnny Walker Jr. sacks, and Corey Flagg just leapfrogging over the line of scrimmage to stop a quarterback sneak or a tush push. I saw somebody had done a cut up on Twitter of Corey Flagg leaping over the line of scrimmage with that video that went viral of a guy leaping over a courtroom desk at a judge, and that's about how Corey Flagg was leaping around on that play. So a great way to send those players out. One of the other newsworthy things to have happened while the team was in Nashville, linebackers coach and co-defensive coordinator DJ Smith left the program. He's already been announced as the new defensive coordinator at App State. That's where DJ Smith played. He was a pretty darn good linebacker for them in his college days before going in the NFL. And then when he came out of the league and wanted to get into coaching, he started out at App State, where he actually coached under Eli Drinkwitz, and then he followed Eli Drinkwitz from App State to Columbia. So it's a school where DJ Smith has a lot of ties. It is a promotion in terms of job title. Like I said, he was linebackers coach and co-defensive coordinator at Missouri, so he's getting a little bit better, a little bit more high-profile job at his alma mater, at the place where he started his coaching career. It makes a lot of sense for him. I've seen nothing but Mizzou's fellow coaches praising him, happy for him. This is the sort of move where, he's a talented coach and a great guy to have around the program. He does a lot in the recruiting space for Missouri as well. But if you're going to lose a coach, this is the way you want to lose it. You want to have, if you're Eli Drinkwitz, you want to have developed this guy into the type of coach who's attractive for other schools to hire, who can go from being a position coach to go be a play caller. It's also something, in all honesty, where I don't think Mizzou as a program could be all that frustrated if they'd wanted to promote DJ Smith to just be their defensive coordinator. They had every opportunity to when Blake Baker left and instead went with Corey Batoon from South Alabama, obviously, as the hire. And I don't want to say they passed over DJ Smith. That insinuates something negative. I think they gave another coach a shot, and now DJ Smith has his shot at App State. And so I think that's a good thing for him. Eli Drinkwitz seemed very supportive online, as did other coaches. So this seems like the sort of good thing exporting coaching talent to other programs. It's a smaller scale than what happened with Blake Baker leaving last offseason. Obviously, he was at a higher rank when he left, but I recall not seeing the same kind of support for him in that move. So there is a contrast between these coaching departures. It's not like a coach leaving a program for another job is automatically good or automatically bad. It is subjective, but this does seem like a positive move for DJ Smith. Other Music City Bowl takeaways: Mizzou seems to be the only SEC team that is capable of beating Big Ten teams. I know some of you will have relished that. I think seeing other performances, notably South Carolina versus Illinois and Alabama against Michigan. In those, Mizzou has now back-to-back bowl wins over Big Ten programs. For however much or little stock you want to give that. And that's what I actually want to talk about with the Music City Bowl. There's been much made in college football and by us on this podcast when we're writing about these things. It's been circling this way for a while of just what bowl games mean in this day and age and what they mean with the lens of the 12-team college football playoff too. I think a lot of people have agreed that the 12-team model has further diminished the value of these bowl games. But then you've also seen situations like Colorado's Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter playing in the Alamo Bowl. Whether the rest of Colorado showed up is perhaps an open question. And then you saw situations like Cam Ward, the Miami quarterback in the Pop-Tarts Bowl, playing one half, eating only one Pop-Tart out of the two given to him in the package. Metaphorically speaking, there. So this is something that is just it is a topic. It's going to be a topic, and then you have Eli Drinkwitz in the day before the Music City Bowl. Like I'll take you through kind of the scene of this. It feels very bowl game, what the whole setup to this was. So the team gets to Nashville on a few days before the bowl game. They're practicing over at Vanderbilt's facilities, actually in Vanderbilt's indoor. In which, by the way, I'll say having gone now in the Vanderbilt indoor facility and seen that, like the level of what Missouri has in its facility, it's in its indoor facility, I should say, makes a difference. It makes a difference. You see that when you see what Vanderbilt is working with there, though they have an indoor running track in theirs, and Missouri does not have an indoor running track. So if that maybe that means something, maybe it probably really doesn't. But anyway, they have. They're practicing there, and they hold these pregame press conferences over at the Gaylord Opry or Opryland Resort. It's one that perhaps some of you who have been in Nashville or just know this as a destination are familiar with. If you Google it, you'll see what this place is. It's got kind of a shopping mall component. There's a water park and these. It's all indoors, but you're walking around and it's glass ceilings and it's like a rainforest inside there. My best comparison is the Mall of America because I'm a Minnesotan who was grown up going to the Mall of America and know that well. But this is something else entirely because it's also just it's a resort, and so they have the pregame press conferences there, but not really there. I mean, technically 100% inside the building, but tucked away in a just very typical hotel ballroom that's been. Partitioned off into this little space in the corner of this resort. It's where the Music City Bowl press conference happens. And so they've got the bowl reps there. They've got all the branding. It's we in the stories just call it the Music City Bowl. We don't work in the sponsor name. There, every reference, it's the Trans Perfect Music City Bowl, the Trans Perfect Music City Bowl, because that's what matters there, right? Just like last year, with the Cotton Bowl, it's the Are they Goodyear, I think? Goodyear Cotton Bowl, all these bowl sponsorships. And again, it's all very ceremonial. You could call it maybe antiquated, I don't know. But you have Eli Drinkwitz and Kirk Ferentz getting presented with these novelty acoustic guitars with bowl branding and their teams on them as the bowl gift, right? Like it's very much just what the bowl industry is now. And Eli Drinkwitz is up there and he starts off talking about his press conference and says bowl games are still a great experience. This is an outstanding one. Kind of the things that you need to say if you're in these, whether or not you believe them as a coach, you need to sort of publicly endorse them. I think that's kind of part of the implied deal that you're invited to this game, you want to be in this game, so you're gonna support this game. And then I asked him about the value of getting to 10 wins or the opportunity to get to 10 wins, just because that seemed like a potentially big deal with this game, right? Talked about it earlier here. 10 wins for in back-to-back seasons for the third time in program history. That's not nothing. And he downplayed that. He said it doesn't really matter that he says, he's not really caught up in that. That was his phrase. I'm not really caught up in the outcome of that, he said. One, financially, he is. He got a $25,000 bonus for winning a 10th game. His assistants, Kirby Moore and Cordy Batoon, both got $15,000 bonuses for winning 10 games. So now, $25,000 is not much to a coach like Eli Drinkwitz, who makes $9 million a year, but it is something. And then he used the phrase "standalone game" first to refer to the bowl, and says it's different than what you had at the end of the season because of the free agency period that occurs. Oh, when he says free agency, he's referring to the transfer portal. That's a phrase he started using recently to refer to it. That's a topic for a whole another show, in all honesty, of the comparisons there. But that's the analogy he's using. And then Drinkwitz has this line: "I hate to be like this, but it's really an exhibition game," he said. Now I tweeted this out, and it ruffled some feathers. Like, some people just didn't like this, and then some people were saying, "Well, so much was made about the Cotton Bowl last year. Was that just an exhibition game, or wasn't that just an exhibition game? What's the difference?" All of this stuff. But I actually, thinking about it more and more, think it's a fair statement, and probably a fairly accurate characterization of what these bowl games are now. It would be dishonest to pretend like Missouri and Iowa playing in the Music City Bowl, to pretend like it even, quote unquote, meant as much, just in a winning the game sense, as any given regular season Big Ten or SEC game for these two schools, right? Simply because even you take Mizzou's most boring or most dull SEC game, which I think would probably be the second to last game of the year at Mississippi State, right? When they were out of the playoff hunt, Mississippi State was struggling at the bottom of the conference all year. It was played in Starkville, right? Like, that was probably the SEC game that meant the least, excuse me, for Mizzou. Luther Burden still played in that game. Armand Membu still played in that game. You could see they went out and they wanted to win that game, right? Iowa, I don't remember their schedule as closely as I do Mizzou's, but they even had, I know they had that game against Nebraska late that turned into a vintage Iowa game. But they had Caleb Johnson, the Big Ten's best running back, playing in those games, and these guys weren't in the bowl because they had opted out to go enter the NFL draft. You can't say that this game means as much as any given SEC game, or even frankly as much as some of these non-conference games do. Mizzou against Murray State or Buffalo early on in the year dominated those games, shut them out. They don't mean as much as an SEC game, but those stars still played because they were early on in the season, right? This is the conversation with bowl games. When they mean less than a regular season game, how do you characterize them? And I think exhibition is sort of fair, because I look at it this way. I made this comparison to some people. I was in Nashville, and I'll make it here because I think it sort of works. If you're someone who watches soccer at all or knows soccer, this will make some sense to you. But they'll have, during the summers, which is the preseason for European soccer teams, you'll see a lot of these big soccer teams, the Real Madrid's, the Manchester United's, Barcelona's, those type of big brand teams will come over to the United States. They do this, they'll go to Australia and Asia too, but they do this in the United States. They'll come over and they'll play some, the soccer term is friendly, but they're preseason games against each other, and they'll play them in NFL stadiums. I think they've done some college stadiums, but you'll get, here's Manchester United playing Real Madrid in the Rose Bowl or something like that. And they're exhibition games, right? And so, but they tend to be pretty well attended, and they're part of, they'll sometimes call it a kind of made up competition. I think at one point it was called like the International Champions Cup. It doesn't matter what the competition is, but they play these games, and people go to them, and they go to them with the understanding that, hey, I'm going to see this big brand play, right? I'm going to see Real Madrid play. I don't expect them to necessarily, there's a chance they may not play their best starting lineup, right? There's a chance the best players might only play 60 minutes instead of 90 minutes, right? They may only go 80% instead of 100% because it's an exhibition game. But people go because it's a chance to see, that team play in that setting, and that's, and it's that team doesn't often play in that setting. It doesn't often play that opponent, right? There's a novelty aspect to it, and nobody's ashamed to admit what those games are, right? You find reasons to go, you find things to watch for, whether it's, you know what, I'm just going to be glad I'm seeing this megastar play for 60 minutes. I'm glad I'm seeing this young guy play. Whatever it is, you find something to watch for here.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
I feel like that's not dissimilar to what bowl games are now, right? If you went to the Music City Bowl in Nashville to watch this game, you knew whenever you bought the ticket, right? At least I hope you knew. You knew there was Luther Burden probably wasn't going to play because we've known how this has been trending for Luther Burden for a while, right? We knew he was going to be an NFL guy. You probably suspected there could be other players like that, like him, weren't playing, right? You might have expected that, you know, you might not see the same competitive fury, right? Now the thing with these games is, like, once you start the game, there's just a degree of competition that comes out in these players. We'll use Brady Cook as the example, right? Like, he has a competitive fire to him. That's a core part of what has made him a successful college player, has made him a successful athlete, that he's just gotten to this point. So many of these guys to make it onto a college, an SEC college football roster, right? You have to have this competitive instinct, this competitiveness to your core. Like if you took Brady Cook and I don't know what his basketball ability is, but, you know, put him in a pickup basketball game, like, I don't think he's going to not be one of the more competitive guys on the court, because that's who he is. So you give these guys any sort of football game, whether it's whether you want to call it an SEC game, right? A postseason game, a playoff game, a bowl game, an exhibition, whatever, he's going to be competitive in that. So you do see that element to all of this. But it's more like a novelty than it is anything with real competitive merit, right? It's similar to those soccer games I mentioned. You're seeing, you know, two brands, quote unquote, because that's what a lot of these SEC and Big Ten football teams are now, right? Regardless of what you think of Missouri's brand or Iowa's brand, right? That's kind of what they are, playing outside of their normal realm of competition in a different setting. That being Nissan Stadium in Nashville, Tennessee, right? That it feels okay to me to use the term exhibition game to describe that. And anyway, as I was thinking about this, I wanted to outline something as far as just the future of bowl games, of what this could be. I want to preface what I'm about to say by saying I don't know how much I think this would be a good idea. Like, I really don't know if this is a good idea. I really don't think this is a plausible idea and that it would ever happen. But I want to outline it here because I've been thinking about this a lot. I've been talking to people about this. And again, I want to put it out there of just by saying, like, and I'm sure somebody has mentioned this, the idea I'm about to share before either. I'm sure I probably subconsciously picked it up from anywhere. You are welcome to sit here and listen and think, what an idiot. How did this guy ever get a podcast? I think the same thing sometimes. So we can agree on that part here. My thought is that if these bowl games, and I should say, like, the non-New Year's Six bowls, because those are now tied in with the playoff, and that's a separate discussion, right? But if these Music City bowls, the ReliaQuest bowls, even the Pop Darts bowl, the grail of competition and cuisine that it may be, right? If these type of bowl games are functionally now exhibition games, what if they were played in the spring? Yeah, okay. I'm gonna outline how this could play out, right? So part of what is weird, I think, is with the bowls right now, is that you have a pretty big disconnect in the type of game that is being played at this moment in time. So actually, we'll use this. This is being recorded on Thursday afternoon, January 2nd, right? In about an hour from the moment I'm recording this, this game will have happened by the time you guys listen to this, I'm sure, but the Sugar Bowl will be kicking off, right? It was postponed and it's being played on this afternoon. So you'll have a college football game, a college football playoff game, excuse me, between Notre Dame and Georgia being played. Then after that, you'll have the Gator Bowl being played, which is Ole Miss and Duke, I believe. And that is essentially an exhibition game, right? The stakes in these two games are so very, very different, but they're being played on the same day, right? And so it becomes a lot harder to go from watching a game that the winner will go on to the CFP semifinals and then watch a game where it's two teams playing for a trophy. I don't know if there's a novelty prize to the Gator Bowl winner, but that bragging rights, whatever you want to call it, right? So I should say bragging rights, not bragging rights. That's the basketball thing. But it creates that disconnect, and that further devalues the exhibition games, right? Part of the reason I think why people will watch these preseason soccer exhibition games, or will watch, when the NFL does its Hall of Fame game in the preseason, or why people will watch spring training for baseball or whatever it may be, any of these exhibitions, right? Is that they're played before the season, not after. Right, so I think that's part of it. Now, back to why this could be spring. And again, this I remain entirely unconvinced that this could actually be a good idea. I don't think it's something that would ever happen, right? But so all these college football programs have spring practices, right? They have their spring games, and that should be games with a pretty hearty set of air quotes around it, because Missouri, for example, this year its spring game was. They call it at thud tempo, which is basically like if you're gonna tackle somebody, you just kind of, you might put your shoulder in them a little bit, wrap them up, but you're not taking anybody to the ground, you're not hitting anybody hard, any of that. And so it ends up being slightly more than a walkthrough, but really only slightly, right? It's not a full game, it's not really full contact. You're not tackling the quarterbacks or anything like that. They're gonna be wearing the non-contact jerseys. And so you have those games already happening. You have the window of spring practices, right? Roughly 3 or so weeks that teams are coming together and practicing. And they play the spring games, and then that's it. My thought is okay, what if at the end of that window you had a bowl game? So well, let's say, this is sort of now retroactive, but let's say the 2024 season ended. Missouri won, went 9-3, did not make the playoff. Cool, all that. Then say early February rolls around, and the college football powers that be, conferences, TV networks, sit around and say, "All right, we're going to match up Missouri and Iowa in the spring." And on March 23rd, right, that's just a date. I don't know what's going on March 23rd or what day of the week it is, but March 23rd, they will go and they will play each other in the Music City Bowl. They will have had, 3 weeks of practice leading up to that. They might do a couple of days of practice down in Nashville, and then they'll play this game. And it is an exhibition game. It means whatever you want it to mean, right? There can be a Music City Bowl trophy and MVP and all that, but it's not counting towards anybody's standings, anything like that. I wonder what impact that would have on interest in the game, viewership for the game, right? On one hand, you would be doing away with the bowl game's sort of traditional place in the calendar, right? Bowls are part of this time of year, I think, right? For a lot of people, you will turn them on because you're off work around the holidays, and you know what? There's a college football game being played at 2 p.m. and somebody's getting mayo dumped on them afterwards. Might as well watch, right? I think that's part of it. I don't know if you have that in March. You probably don't have that in March. I wonder about the travel component, right? My thinking with March is that maybe these games can line up with school spring break, right? So you were going to go to Florida for your spring break vacation. Well, how would you go and time it up with a bowl game? A decent number of people go south to watch baseball spring training in Florida and Arizona. Maybe this could work and expand on that. I wonder if there could be more interest because that's a time of year when all respect to the what are the USFL, UFL, the Battle Hawks League, right? All respect to that. People kind of consider that to be a time of year that is devoid of football, right? Maybe you take a dead spot on the calendar and turn it into something a little more intriguing when it comes to having games to watch, right? That could be possible. Again, I wonder if that could be a path forward. I don't think it really is one that could happen. But it would require these bowl games. It would require more teams and coaches to admit they are exhibition games to almost market them as such. And I don't see that happening anytime soon. But that thought did cross my mind. Please feel free to call me stupid for it. My email is out there on Twitter. You can tweet at me and say I'm barking up the wrong tree, but that is a thought I had because again I do agree with Eli Drinkwitz on this that it is an exhibition game. Should he have made that comment? Maybe not with the bull reps right there, but he did say it, and I struggle to think of a way that you could tell him he is wrong to be thinking it. And yeah, before we go, let's talk a little men's basketball. Like I said at the start, Mizzou opens its SEC slate on Saturday against Auburn. I believe it's a 3 p.m. tip there on the road. Mizzou has not won an SEC basketball game in quite a long time, not since whoever the last win would have been in the SEC tournament in Dennis Gates' first year. I'm now thinking back to that, and I should have written it down in my notes before we started recording. Don't know who that would have been against. The conventional wisdom heading into this weekend would suggest that the losing streak against SEC teams will continue because Auburn is very, very good this year. I think they are ranked number two in the AP poll. They are number one in KenPom's rankings, if that's your sort of thing. If you like the KenPom projections, KenPom says Auburn is projected to win 89-71. That'd be an 18-point win. They give Mizzou a 4% chance to win in this game. So, not an easy way to open the SEC schedule for Mizzou, which had a pretty decent run through non-con at 11-2 at this point. I think that was probably the most realistic, or the probably the best, I should say, realistic outcome there. When you look at the games against the better teams, those four games being at Memphis, home against Cal, home against Kansas, and then bragging rights against Illinois, going 2-2 in those, I don't think is a bad showing at all for Missouri. Well, obviously taking down Kansas, who was ranked at number one, like you have a win that is going to be remembered for a very, very long time, and that's worth something. Pushing Illinois like they did, we talked about that game on last week's episode, and only losing by three there. Like there are reasons to be encouraged about this team. The conversation at this point in the calendar, I'm writing this a little bit today, is just looking at like, is the NCAA tournament possible for this team, right? At this point, you can't say like they're 100% on the path for it, but they're also, I don't think, is a reason to think that this team couldn't be an NCAA tournament team. The question, as it stands right now, is what will be enough in this SEC schedule to make it in there? This conference is ridiculously talented. It's the best conference in college basketball this year, which we've talked about, right? You know that by now. What will be enough to get a team in there? Dennis Gates is already lobbying for 12 SEC teams to make the tournament, which would be something. This is a 16-team league, so that would be all but four teams getting out of there. That means you could be well under 500 in conference play and still make it. So SEC teams play 18 conference games, right? You would assume if you can get to 9-9, that will probably be enough for the tournament. The question is 8-10 enough? 7-11, right? Like, depending on what the strength of this conference could be, that could be where it is. And so I think if I were setting an over under on Mizzou wins this season, I think it would be, well, it'd be around that seven mark. And so I don't know if I'd say it's really 7.5 or 6.5 or somewhere in there. The projection on KenPom is seven wins. And you look at who Mizzou is going to be favored against. That's LSU at home, Vanderbilt at home, Arkansas at home, Oklahoma at home, and South Carolina at home. Oh, and I'd add Ole Miss at home. So six games Mizzou is as of right now favored at home. And then that would be saying they flip another game or drop one of those in football. They get to 7 wins somehow there. That's not a whole lot. It's not a whole lot. The only games that looking at these numbers, you'd say Mizzou is really out of, or would be highly maybe highly surprising if they won, are at Auburn, at Tennessee, another very, very good team, and then at Florida, a team that's been good and given Mizzou issues. And then there are other tough ones, right? Like just going on the road in the SEC is going to be difficult against the Texases, the Arkansas's, the Oklahoma's, even road environments just are tough in this. It's going to come down to whether Mizzou can take care of business at home, right? Win these games that are winnable, because winnable games in the SEC are very hard to come by. And then if it can just pull something off in one or two other games, that the combination of taking care of business and then pulling off one or two could be 8 wins. It really could be. So it will be interesting to see there. Caleb Grill, a return to action against Alabama State in the final non-conference game. He didn't play a full workload by any means, but he was back on the floor taking shots. I, full transparency, did not watch that game. I was in Nashville in the Tennessee Titans press box, writing away on Music City Bowl coverage. But I did look through the numbers, and it seemed like Caleb Grill scored. He made a couple threes, so they're ramping him back. It'll be interesting to see what his role looks like against Auburn, right? That's he missed about a month, so that'd be escalating pretty quickly. But the team could certainly use him. It'll be big to see how Mark Mitchell does at the free throw line. We talked about that last week. Getting some consistency from Tamar Bates. Can Ant Robinson continue to take this leap forward, right? Like, what is that going to look like? He did miss the Alabama State game with an illness, so that'll be something to watch as far as his availability against Auburn. SEC home opener coming up on January 7th. That's next Tuesday against LSU. That's one of those games where Mizzou will have to take care of business, right? If it wants to get to where it wants to go in the SEC, and the losing streak against SEC teams, which is now at 20 games, 19 losses last year, plus the one that ended the SEC tournament run in the 2022-2023 season, stands to be snapped at some point here. I'll leave us on this stat. KenPom says there is a 0.01% chance of a winless record in conference play. So there is what is that, a one in 10,000, I think, chance that Mizzou would go winless in SEC play. So it was improbable last year. No, I bet this is a much better team, as you all know by this point. Mizzou women's basketball opens its SEC slate with a tough game for itself. Number 2 South Carolina on Thursday night, which very well may have happened by the time you listen to this. So we won't dawdle on that. Before we go here, I do want to just make a mention here, as you've figured out, this was just me on this episode, with Ben Fredrickson's departure from the Post-Dispatch staff. Of course, wish him well. He's in a fantastic new role with BJC Healthcare. He's very excited about it. His family's very excited about it. It's a good move for him and his people. But it does mean a pretty big change for this podcast. I think a lot of you are probably listening here when it was Dave Mattern and Ben Fred hosting together, right? And then when I came in, and it was Ben Fred and me over on this. So this podcast is going to look different in 2025. I don't think I want to make a habit of it just being me talking to you guys. Maybe you like that, but I suspect you like having multiple perspectives on here. And so I'm going to open this for y'all's thoughts. I mentioned you can find my email out there on Twitter or on our website. You can tweet me, DM me there, however you want to reach me. I am open to hearing from all of you what you would like this podcast to be. That can be, it could be finding one consistent co-host we go with. It could be bringing in guests, mixing in me talking today, like what this was. If you have thoughts, I want to give y'all an opportunity to expand them. We've got a good listener base here, and I want to do right by all of you by giving that opportunity, that space for your feedback. Again, like I said, this is a year where we're gonna not overhaul the podcast, right? Like, I want this to be what it's been, but I want to make this work for everybody who tunes in, because I do appreciate all of you who take the time to listen. And this is a great way for us to share, for us at the Post-Dispatch to share Mizzou thoughts and get that going out there. And I do enjoy the emails and tweets and stuff that I receive from those of you who listen. So if you have thoughts, please feel free to express them. Want this to be a medium that works for all of you who take the time to listen to it. And we may be trying things. You know, we'll get into to NFL draft time and have some folks on to talk about that. Maybe some guests to talk basketball things. I'm working on seeing, you know, do we want to have interviews with people as part of this podcast. Again, if there are things that that you would like to see, please do let me know, and we'll see what we can make happen there. So with that, we'll call it an episode for today. Thank you as always for taking the time to listen. You can find plenty of Mizzou coverage over in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and stltoday.com, writing about football still, even as it's over here, the transfer portal. I think we could still see a little bit more movement there. It is the window to enter is back open for Mizzou for a little bit, but still plenty of guys who have yet to commit, so more to look for there. SEC men's basketball starting up here, even mixing in, you'll find out tomorrow a little quick gymnastics and wrestling story about some kind of the business side of college sports a little bit. All of that in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and stltoday.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. Enjoy the rest of the college football playoff games, and we will talk to you next week.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate. Which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.